Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, the fully electric EV6 with a range of up to 528 kilometres. For more, visit kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Good afternoon, I'm Damien O'Reilly and this is Liveline. And 51551 is the text number. We're going to get started today with a really shocking story. And Karen, I'm so sorry to hear about this and what has happened to you. But take me back to the beginning. Yourself and your son, Kevin, you went out for a walk near your home, what, 3 weeks ago or so?
No, I was working and my son was working. And when we came home, we found that our dog was gone. She had got out of the window. The sitting room window was left slightly open. She's like the little Houdini escape artist. So she was able to jump onto the couch, onto the table, onto the windowsill and out the window. She's done it before. So we actually think she just got out herself. We don't think anyone actually took her out of the house.
And a dachshund, Keisha.
A little dachshund called Keisha.
And how long had you got Keisha?
We have her going on 4 years.
Right. Very much part of the family.
Oh, she was very much. She was our baby.
Yeah. So sorry, I mistook you there. You were out. You were both out at work, but Keisha was in the house at home.
Yes, I had got up that morning. Like my son gets up and like lets her out to go to the toilet and goes to work.
Yeah.
And left her in the sitting room. She was quite happy lying on the couch. When I got up that morning, I just checked on her, and then I had to run out the door, got a taxi, so she could have been gone from 9 or from 10, we're not sure. She could have got out and followed me when she seen me getting a taxi.
Mm-hmm.
We're not 100% positive on that because the taxi came so quick, I didn't get a chance to give her another little look, which I normally do, say goodbye to her and tell her to mind the house and we'd be back soon.
Yeah, and you're almost 100% as well that you don't think anybody took the dog from the house, that she got out through an open window.
Yes, because she has done this before, but like she doesn't usually get very far.
Yeah, and she'd
go as far as the local shop,
mm-hmm.
and that's where she was found the last time and returned was because she's very much a loved dog and everybody would know her.
Right. So when you discovered that she was missing when you came home from work, what did you do then?
Well, a search party went out looking for my son and his friends, myself. We rang everybody we knew, walked around where we take her for walks, the canal, the local area. People went up to the park. And it was just a major search party and we had leads that she'd been up at the shop and that she'd been around at Ragdale Apartments, and then we didn't hear anything again and we had to give up the search. It was too dark. We couldn't find her anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time she was ever out at night time on her own.
So after a few days, did you give up hope that, you know,
no.
she was gone? No.
No, no, no. We went out every day. All our friends went out. We got posters made and put up everywhere in shops, on trees, poles, anywhere we could think of.
Mm-hmm.
We had her up on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere we could think of that we could look for anyone that had any ideas.
You never lost hope that she would be found.
No.
Yeah.
Never.
And at what stage, I mean, this is where it gets very distressing then, and it's tough for you to talk about this, I'm sure, but at what stage then did you discover that what had happened to her happened?
Well, it was last Thursday night. My son had got a call saying that there was a dachshund in Leyland, and somebody had a dachshund down there. So when he went down to have a look, it wasn't Keisha.
Mm-hmm.
So he bumped into some children on the way home, and they said they'd seen a dog floating in the canal. So they said it was a black and white dog, and she'd been there for about 4 days. So he didn't think it was going to be Keisha, but he'd go over it anyway, like he'd rescue any dog.
Mm-hmm.
and he discovered that it was her, but she was unrecognisable when he fished her out. She was tied up in a gear bag, like a gym bag, which was only half her size, zipped up right up to her neck, and mobile phone wire was wrapped around her neck numerous times and tied around the handles of the bag, and she was gone. She was completely mutilated. So anyway, he ran home then to me because he couldn't get her out of the bag. She was so tightly tied up into it. He arrived home totally distressed, crying and screaming, and I went down with him. We got black bags, Stanley blade, and blankets and towels for her, and went down and freed her, which was absolutely horrendous. She was completely waterlogged, and only we had a torch with us, and we shined. We could see her markings that it was her, but she was all bloated up and swollen, and she was in a terrible state.
Like, do you think she was tortured before she died? Well, what do you think, based on what you've seen?
It looks like she was cruelly treated and tortured. I'd say she was murdered before she was even thrown in the canal. She looks like she'd been beaten. There was hair missing off her body. And I don't know how long she was in that canal or how. We believe she was held somewhere beforehand, because there's no way, if she had been roaming the streets, she would have been found and she would have come home.
Mm-hmm.
But we believe somebody had her and were hiding her from us.
And is there anything you can do? Have you reported it to the Gardaí?
It has been reported to the guards. It was reported before we even found her. So my son was liaison with one particular Garda.
Mm-hmm.
So when he found her as well, two guards were passing in a bike, and they told him to email the Garda that he was dealing with already. So he has gone down and brought down all, we kept the bag and the telephone wire, and they don't seem to think like they'd be able to do anything with that because she was in the water for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really hold out much hope, but there is CCTV on that canal.
Are the Gardaí actively investigating this savage episode of animal cruelty? Are they investigating it as such?
I don't think they're doing enough, to be honest with you, because it's gone on so long. I don't think they're investigating enough. This was wide across our area, and nothing was done. I don't think anyone went out looking for others than ourselves and our friends and family.
Yeah, but we were in touch with the guards. Say no arrests have been made and investigations are ongoing. So the body of the dog was found in the Grand Canal, am I right? Whereabouts do you think, where did your son find?
On the 11 o'clock in Clondalkin.
Okay.
Going down towards the Waterside Pub.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever heard of anything like this happening before in that area? Would you have been afraid to let Keisha out of your sight? You know, was there ever reports of people?
Well, I have never heard in their area of cruelty like that. I'm so shocked that anyone is even capable of doing this to our baby. Like, she's just an innocent little child. And she was so playful and happy a character. Everybody loved her.
And
she was very nervous of strangers. She wouldn't have just gone off with anyone. Somebody would have had to take her.
Yeah, I was going to ask
now,
you
she
that.
She would follow children, and she might follow little dogs, you know, but like, she would not have gone off with anyone willingly. She used to, if anyone came near her, she'd roll over onto her back and kind of like have her legs in the air and keep rolling, so you wouldn't be able to pick her up.
Mm-hmm. And is it a complete mystery as to what happened to her? Has anybody in over the past 3 weeks, as you've gone looking for her, has anybody said that they saw somebody take the dog, or they heard about a dog being tortured or beaten or killed and thrown in? Did anybody see anything or hear anything?
No. But somebody knows something. Somebody knows something. And as we were putting up posters, the posters were getting taken down again. So this makes us believe that it's somebody local.
Mm.
And they didn't want the attention on them. So it makes it all the more suspicious.
Was there a video going around, though, did I?
There is a TikTok video going around.
What's in that?
It's just children that found... We believe it's just children that found the dog floating, but we couldn't be sure. We don't want to accuse anyone of anything.
No.
But there is... It has been seen, and children have seen that, which is very distressing to know that even children have been able to look at that.
And anybody listening that has, you know, a pet or has a dog will obviously sympathise greatly with you, because, you know, dogs are very much part of people's lives and their family. And for you, you had it for had Keisha for 4 years, so obviously very much part of your life.
Yeah. Very, very sad. I can't believe it. Like, every day I woke up crying, and it's just, I'm on the verge of tears all the time. It's just heartbreaking. I can't believe it. And we just want really to find justice for her. We have a GoFundMe justice, and people have been so kind and so supportive. And we had €1,000 for a reward for her. So my son decided that we keep that going, but it was to find her killers and to get justice for her.
It's savage cruelty that anybody...
Oh, my God. It
..would
just,
do
it
something like this
to
a living creature. It's just unbelievable. I mean, you know, we sincerely hope that the Garda investigation is successful in identifying, because you do this once and get away with it. What next? Do you see yourself, you know, obviously Keisha's irreplaceable. Would you buy another dog, or... Maybe it's too soon to even think that.
I could never fathom having another dog now at the moment. It was just, I don't think I could go through that kind of loss again. We're all heartbroken, and we can't believe the cruelty. And all I have is visions in my head of how she died and how she suffered. I tried to remember just as the happy, playful little girl she was, but it's very, very hard. If she had died normally or had been just taken with a lovely family and they were looking after her, I'd rather hear that. But to know that she probably died screaming and terrified and looking for her daddy and her mammy.
And how is your son taking all of this as well?
He is absolutely distraught. She used to sleep with Kevin every night, so as soon as he'd get up to go to bed, he'd just like call her name, and straight away they'd go to bed together, and they woke up together, they slept together, did everything together. So, like, she is definitely his baby, mm-hmm. but she's part of our family.
And I suppose
and she has a large family of friends and doggy friends, and even like the Dachshund Social got together yesterday in the park, Phoenix Park, and did a little walk for her in remembrance for her. So that was really lovely. I've been talking to a lot of people and they've been so supportive. And we just want this animal cruelty to stop. And Garda really need to take it more seriously, because what are they capable of doing next? Will it be a child? Like, what are they capable of? People that could do that to an innocent animal.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Gardaí will say that they are doing their best, and they more than anybody would obviously want to find the perpetrators of this. And you're appealing to anybody. I mean, somebody knows something, obviously, and probably more than one person. And, you know, to savagely kill an animal like that, as you said, people might have heard it happening or whatever. If anybody has any information, to contact the Gardaí in Inchindauch. And Trish is on the line, 51551. Trish, you've been listening to Karen there.
Hi, how are you? I'm just distraught for her. I really am. I just can't imagine what it was like to go through that. I have a Dachshund, and I was picturing my own dog, and I just wanted to pass on my deepest condolences. I'm also a dog trainer in Carlow here, and I don't know if I can do anything, but if she wanted to take my number and have a chat, if there's anything I can do to help, like, just even for a chat.
Karen?
Just devastated for her.
Karen?
Thank you so much. It's lovely to hear from people.
Trish, have you heard of this happening before?
Not to that severity. That's just very bizarre behaviour. Like, I can't even imagine what kind of human being... God, I'm actually getting really upset. It's just unthinkable. Like, why would anyone want to do that?
And a lot more people own dogs now. Anecdotally, anyway, there's a lot more families now that have dogs as well, and a lot more dogs around. So, as you said, people in this country have a wonderful love of dogs. How anybody could actually do something like this to... And you have a similar dog, similar breed, a Dachshund.
I have, yeah. I have a chocolate and tan Dachshund.
Yeah. And what are they like? So, placid dogs?
Oh my God, breath of fresh air. No, they're not aggressive at all. I don't think there's any such thing as an aggressive dog by nature. I think they learn it, unfortunately. But no, Dachshunds are sweet, like generally beautifully little behaviour dogs. Like, they're just so lively and so kind and so just so lovable. So for someone to do that to any dog, but especially them, it's just unthinkable.
Yeah. All right. Well. Thanks for your sympathy there, Tricia. And Karen, look, it's a tough time for you and Kevin, but let's hope that your call to Liveline today might help bring the perpetrators of this horrible act of cruelty to justice. It can't be tolerated whatsoever on any grounds. And our sympathies to you, Karen, and it is a tough time. You only learned of what happened to her before the weekend. So thanks for coming on the radio and telling us about this today, and to just alert people. And obviously mind their own dogs as well, that this could actually happen. But we wish you all the very best, Karen. And if you do hear anything, or if there's any update or any breakthrough in this, do let us know.
OK, thank you very much, Damien. I really appreciate you listening to our story.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Virginia, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Damien, how are you?
I've just read your email. Your husband must have been in absolute agony, and it happened so easily.
Well, he wasn't actually in agony. He was just putting the bins out. There was a big spider, and my kids, well, they're big kids, are afraid of spiders, so he decided to get kitchen paper and save the spider and put him at the end of the garden. He put the bin out, and then he came back in, and he said to me, "I think I've got a splinter. Will you have a look?" And I couldn't see anything, so I went off to bed, and he came up to bed, but he didn't feel the best. Anyway, 3-4 in the morning, he got very warm, temperature, whatnot. He went to see his GP, and he was put on antihistamine. But that evening, it got worse again, so he rang his GP, and he was put on antibiotics. So another 12 hours later, anyway, I went out for a few hours. I noticed, came home, and he was asleep, which is not like him, and on his finger had gone purple, and it was kind of white, and there was a line then, which he had noticed earlier, a red line going from on the vein right up towards your T-shirt. It was just reaching there and getting bigger. So rang his GP and was told, "You have cellulosis, you need to get to A&E immediately." Pain was excruciating. His finger was getting bigger and bigger, and his hand, and very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So we were told then, yeah, go into A&E. So I called, obviously, we've private health insurance. You know, I'm not saying that everybody has to have it, but it's, you know, you have it there. And we were told by the matter private, we've no appointments till Saturday. Then, this is Thursday afternoon. Then I called the Beacon, and we'll call you back, I think was their answer. And then I called the Hermitage, and they would have nothing available till 8 o'clock in the morning. You had to call. I never rang BlackRock.
Mm.
And then we are members of Leia, and then they said, no, he may need an IV. And really, they wouldn't recommend, they can't do that in Leia and Cherrywood or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So he went into A&E, and triage saw him, and he was left sitting outside in the cubes, which all have to do, and it's not a nice place to be for anybody. And it went on for a couple of hours, and by 9:30, he thought his hand was now, at this point, this pain was excruciating. So we went back in and back up to the desk, and they said somebody would see him. Then another nurse saw him in triage and asked more questions, and he'd brought the antibiotics with him and said, you know, he said, well, what is the number? Like, how long will I be? I'm really uncomfortable and with the pain. So she said, well, you can take your antibiotics, and she gave him some paracetamol. So then he saw a doctor, I think it was 10:30, say 10:45, and he then said, right, we can either give you a local or we can just go for it. And my husband said, no, just go for it. So he went to the nail and tried to get, you know, disperse the venom, basically. And then he went again, and Kieran couldn't cope with it. So I think he gave him four or five local, and then lanced it two or three times, and all this fluid came out. He was told then, you know, the doctor, he said, you know, A&E, the doctor was really good, gave him pain relief to go home, and if over the weekend, if it was bad, come back into A&E and you could see a surgeon, if that was the case. He's just been back from the GPs, and they're going to dress it every couple of days. No question of what type of spider it is. Nobody really was concerned about this, but it was a venomous spider, so to be careful, and we've seen the articles about it. But it's that point, and then also, you know, I didn't realise that you have to make an appointment now in A&E. A&E is deemed accident and emergency, but now you have to call to make an appointment. So I know, like, the frontline team, my God, they've done so much, all hospitals, doctors, you know, I really feel for them. But what's the point in you having private healthcare when you have to ring, make an appointment?
Well, this is just in relation to the private hospitals.
No, you can go into a regular hospital, you're blocking up the system.
And that's an important point to make, just as an aside, and we'll get back to the spider in a minute. But that, I think in your email to us, you were saying that you're not bragging that you have health insurance. You're lucky you have it. And the reason you were trying to get into the private was to make use of that because you have health insurance, so that you weren't blocking up A&E in the public hospitals. That was the point of that you were saying. Anyway, it was in Beaumont that he ended up.
And they were marvellous when he got through the thing. And it's sad what you see what's going on there. We all know that. And you're all in little cubes. And then eventually you get into triage and they're under huge pressure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and my GP I've just seen there recently, and I dropped him over there for the dressing. And he said the health system is just, it's huge pressure. And that's all I was trying to do, you know, trying to utilise our private health insurance. And I couldn't.
Well, getting back to the spider, describe the spider, Virginia.
He's about an inch. We don't have a picture because obviously he was just getting rid of him to put him in the back garden. He's about an inch. He's big and he's got long legs, but it's a black spider. Very unusual, he would say.
Is it one of these false widows? Which I think I read an article recently about. They are more common in Ireland than ever before, whatever, and just to be wary of them. So he's not afraid of spiders, obviously, and he got a piece of kitchen paper.
Paper towel, and just wrapped it up and thought he'll save the spider, because my two girls are terrified of spiders, and we get texts sometimes at 2 a.m, will you come down and get rid of the spider? You know, so I can tell you what, they were getting little hoovers for Christmas, they won't be getting any calls to get rid of spiders now.
Well, I'm just wondering, how do you deal with getting rid of a spider like that, or if you have spiders in the kitchen?
He was outside, he was at the wall.
Oh, he's outside,
I don't know if they come in. I don't know about these false spiders, false widow spiders, but the point I'd make, don't go near them.
How long after the incident did he begin to see the swelling or feel a bit of pain?
I'd say half an hour, very quickly. He thought he actually got a splinter, so it was nearly immediately. You know the way
Well, he must have been very afraid. Were you frightened when you saw the line and the...
I was like, and I knew I'd been went out for a while. When I came back home and he was asleep and his finger was kind of purple, and then I thought, oh my God. And it's cellulosis is basically what he has.
Poison. Could have been poisoned.
Not a doctor, but it's heading for. Yeah.
So they had to slice into the skin to get rid of the pus, was it?
First of all, they went in through a needle as a nail, and then they went to the back and they went to the side.
Oh,
so he's got two big lance kind of marks on his finger, and it's purple, and it's still slightly there. Yeah, and then they squeeze it out. They put four or five locals into the finger, and they push it out.
I presume the doctors are telling him how lucky he was in the end. We always say when bad things happen to you, if there's a good outcome, how lucky you are. He's very unlucky at the start, but...
Oh, he's very, but it's very serious. And even when I saw my GP and he said, this is very serious, you know, something like this has to be acted on immediately. And you know, they did eventually, like 5-6 hours later, you know, Accident Mercy were great in Beaumont. They could do the best they can do.
Yeah.
But, you know...
How did they react when the word spider was mentioned and a bite?
They weren't kind of very... You know, I wasn't obviously allowed with them, but it was kind of like, yeah, and he had the letter. We had to pick up the letter from the GP. He had that letter, yeah. Was handed in. But they can only do what they can do at the moment. They're under huge pressure.
Yeah.
You know, there's somebody else with something else going on. And, you know, when he went back in, the triage team said he will be seen in the next half hour, 40 minutes. But even at that, I have had friends have recently been in and been there overnight. He was seen very quickly because it was serious. And even my GP said that's why he was seen so quickly, because they couldn't leave that. Something like that, they have to get an exit for the venom to come out, basically.
And how is he now?
He's not great. I wouldn't say now. It's going to take, well, what they say, that he's back on Wednesday for another dressing, and I think it's every couple of days, and then it'll take 2 or 3 weeks for him to recover.
Right, so he's not out of the woods as such, or is he?
Well, no, he's on antibiotics. Okay. He'll be okay. He's on very strong antibiotics, and he's got another certain amount of time of antibiotics. He'll be okay,
yeah,
but it's...
Yeah. And have you done any research into the false widow since?
No. No. I think my husband has, but I haven't. No.
Right, yeah. Now, I'd be interested to hear from other listeners if something similar has happened, because, like, imagine if it was a child, you know.
A dog. Well, I mean, that very sad story of that lady was horrific. God, her pelper. I mean, you know, animals are just such part of people's lives.
We're not used to necessarily very, very dangerous insects in this country.
No.
But in this instance, you know, if these false widows, as they're called, are becoming more common, we need to be very aware of the potential.
And what they look like. I mean, there was an article in the Times last Saturday about, you know, spiders and all of that, not to touch them and, you know, what's coming into your home. And it would make you wary in the garden.
Well, if you don't want to kill them, and a lot of people don't obviously want to kill creatures of any type like that, I'm just wondering, you know, what's the best way? Maybe people will know what's the best way to deal or get rid of a spider if it's crawling around your kitchen or outside, or how do you actually get rid of it without doing it any harm?
Has anybody else been bitten by these things?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's kind of like, and we all hear these things, and, you know, when you go away, and he had to get a tetanus actually as well. That was the other thing. Yeah, that's normal, you know, but
not nice.
No, but, you know, the story is he is okay. But, you know, an older person could be out there, a child could be out there, an animal could be outside. You know, I don't know a lot about it, but, that's the story.
Well, listen, thanks for highlighting it, Virginia. I'm glad that he's okay and recovering, but amazing just how simple something like that can actually almost change your life. Well, for the weekend it has.
It's that side and the piece of, like, A&E, why are we making appointments? Who's that? Anybody to answer that question? Where did that come in? I know they were closed down throughout COVID, that's fine, but why are we making appointments for A&E? It's called accident emergency. Like, why? Nobody's, you know, there's no answers for that, and it's just kind of creeped in. And
that's the other thing that you were saying, that in the private hospitals that you have to actually make an appointment for accident and emergency.
Yeah.
So, and you were told by three of them to ring or go back the following day.
The next day, or come back on Saturday was one. You know, they just didn't have the availability.
Okay, if they want to contact us, they can. John Hassett is on the line there. John, good afternoon to you.
Hello.
Hello, John. You're listening there to Virginia. Can you give us any news or update or anything on these false widows?
Well, it's just that we have them in our side passage and generally outside on the conservatory.
Yeah.
And you notice them later on in the night time, you know. And I was just out in the side passage there with the lights on about a week ago. And I was watching one of them just walking across the wall. And another little one came out of a tiny hole really fast and attacked it, went back. We do watch out for them, me and my daughter, you know.
Yeah.
Between the pair of us, we don't like spiders generally, but we know about the false widow, and that actually how dangerous it can be, you know.
And listening to Virginia, there, are you more scared now?
No, it hasn't increased. We just don't like spiders, and we we'd noticed them hanging around the windows, the opening of the windows of the conservatory, right? And for some reason or other, they can hide in tiny, at the tiniest of little spaces.
Right.
You know, the tiniest and come out.
And have you noticed more of them? Are they multiplying a lot around your house there, John?
Well, I just heard on the radio months ago
right.
that the female can produce 100 eggs and...
Okay.
You know, that they are increasing, obviously.
Yeah.
If you really study the walls at the time, at night time, or the outside of the conservatory, you will come across them.
Right.
You know?
Stay away from them, is what Virginia's saying anyway,
yeah,
John.
Don't go near them.
Don't go near them.
Stay away from
you'll
them.
You'll be in, ringing to make an appointment in A&E. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, we're going to leave it there, John. Thanks very much for that. Virginia,
cheers,
thanks for calling and letting us, alerting us to that. And we wish your husband well. Thanks
Thank
a million.
Thank you.
All
okay,
right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Sinead Gleason's on the line. Sinead, good afternoon. Thanks for contacting us. You can't get your pet dog home to where you're living. You're now living in Spain, but you're back here in Ireland. Take up the story. What's the problem?
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for allowing me to come on. So basically, I moved to Spain basically at the end of January.
Mm-hmm.
And took my little dog over with me, and I've never had a problem coming in and out. Usually I go via another country because there's no direct flights to the Canaries. That's where I live in Tenerife. So I brought in my dog. I came back to Ireland to drop my dog at his doggy daycare. We usually drop him there when we go on holidays, so we were going off to Greece. So we came back at the beginning of August, and no issues coming in whatsoever. Normally he comes in the hold. What that means is if your dog is over 8 kg, then they can't come with you in the cabin. They have to go into the hold with the rest of the baggage.
Yeah. And what size of a dog have you got?
So he's about 10 kg. He's a little Cavachon.
Ah, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, so a small little guy. Yeah. So no problem going in and out ever. And then I had my 40th birthday in Dublin on Friday night. And the idea was that I was going to go first thing in the morning back to Amsterdam, like go back to Spain via Amsterdam. So I arrived with KLM. I was flying with KLM, and I arrived at 3 a.m. to do all the usual checks. And they said, no, that Dublin Airport had brought in this new rule that they allow the dogs to come into the country, but you can't leave the country. So this came in, I think, in July. Now, my airline never informed me that of this new rule. So obviously there was a panic then in the morning. And my son was with me. He was to also go back with us. And we were both booked on the flight. So when there was all this panic, the ladies in KLM were like, oh, just go and get a soft case for him, because they were looking at him. He's only a small little guy, and then you can bring him on with you, and we'll put you, I assure you, we'll put you on the next flight, which was at 11:10. So I ran out, obviously waiting till the shops opened at 9:00, to the local pet shop, got the carrier, the soft case, brought it back, and sent my son on the original flight and said I'd meet you in Amsterdam. They decided then that, you know, he was still too heavy, and that I had to go and organise him to get him over via cargo, like an external cargo company, which was going to cost €600-700, as opposed to the €100 that I was supposed to pay. Which, to be honest,
but just going back, I mean, how would you usually bring the dog?
In the hold.
In the hold.
Always, yeah.
Because
he's just a bit too heavy to come on with me.
Yeah, onto the plane. And that's never been a problem before.
Never.
It's natural,
never, ever,
all
been,
of that.
Yeah, I left Ireland right before the pandemic in January 2020.
Yeah.
And I've been over and back been over back obviously within with the pandemic, and it hasn't been as frequent, but I've been home twice a year. For the summer and then for Christmas, and never been an issue at all until I believe July 19th this new rule came in. But and I've heard of horror stories. I was chatting to security there in Dublin Airport. They were telling me that there was people were stuck with their dogs in Ireland for 3 months because they couldn't get them out, and there wasn't enough room in the cargo because there's a backlog because of all of this happening. So if it's basically, it's down to an issue where the Dublin Airport...
Well, sorry, I interrupted you there. Just going back you went off then looking to see, could you put the dog in the hold on the flight to Amsterdam? And what happened then?
No, so what I did was I went in to buy a soft case.
Yeah.
So, because if you had a soft case, then you could bring him on with you. Like, they looked at him and they kind of said, okay, like, they were sort of trying to make an allowance because I was in a bit of a state, as you can imagine. Mm. And they were like, just go and get a soft case and come back and then you can bring him on with you into the cabin, which is something I've never done before. So I ran off thinking, in a desperate state, thinking if I just got this case. So I came back then with him in it. And they were like, no. And so then I spent 12 hours in the airport going over and back to different people trying to figure it out. Everyone was just like, well, it's kind of not our problem. Or it's a Dublin Airport thing. It's not a KLM thing. It's not a, you know, it's just moving around and getting absolutely nowhere and being given numbers that, you know, nobody was there and the cargo companies were closed on a Saturday and Sunday. So it's been an absolute nightmare, to be honest.
So what reason were you given as to why the dog could not go into the hold on the plane? To get from the airport to the actual terminal to the plane?
The Dublin Airport cannot take responsibility any longer for that little journey. So when I get sorted, right, my dog will be on the plane with me, but it won't be arranged by Dublin Airport. It will be arranged by an external cargo company. That's the new rule, basically.
So before this, when you were checking in the airport, you'd put the dog in a cage. Is it a special
cage?
And off it goes with the rest of the luggage. Is that the way it gets from the terminal to the plane?
Yeah, pretty much.
Does it come out on the carousel then? The far side?
No.
Sorry for asking, I just have never...
No. It's because a lot of people do ask. So, for example, KLM, like, they would be known for their pet policy. They would be known for transporting dogs. In Amsterdam Airport, they have a pet hotel. And they really do take care of the dog. So
when you land the far side, how do you get reunited with the dog?
He gets personally delivered to me
by
a guy. Yeah, so it's I feel 100% comfortable putting him in. And especially because it's only a short journey. Like, for example, the Amsterdam flight would only be like an hour and a half. So, and I know that he's absolutely fine. And even he's gone so many times now that he's kind of used to it. But now this whole other situation is that he's going to have to go into cargo, which is still the same thing, but an external company will be responsible for it, as opposed to Dublin Airport, say.
But on the same plane or a separate plane?
On the same plane. So it's going to be the same thing, only that I have to arrange it separately, not through my airline, but through an external cargo company. And that could take, like, I have a lady working on it now, kindly, from Multicargo. She's been super helpful at this stage, even though she doesn't really have to be, because I should be probably put in a queue. But I it's been such a stressful situation that she's just been really helpful, really.
So there is a way of getting the dog onto the plane with you, but it's going to cost you more money.
It's going to cost more money, but it's not necessarily about the money. It's about the fact that I was only learning this when I was there. Like, my airline should have told me that this was the new situation. So then I would have pre-planned it and booked it in with a cargo company. And I just really wanted to come on because I think people are unaware of this. And
yeah.
I know that there's a lot of people that are going to get an awful fright when they land with their dog, thinking they can bring him in the same way or bring him out the same way they brought him in.
Okay. And this is, so you got no notice, but this isn't an airline policy. It's an actual Dublin Airport Authority policy, is it?
Exactly.
Okay.
I believe it's a DAA one, so I think the Cork Airport will be the same.
Okay.
I even actually tried to look into going from Belfast, actually. And then there was this other thing where they don't take, with the Brexit, there's a cargo issue there. So I didn't want to trek all the way up to Belfast and then realise I was back to square one. So I've just been kind of sitting waiting, really.
Yeah, now we did contact the DAA. I'll just go through what they, because it gave us quite a lengthy, in fairness, statement trying to explain. Now, it's a little confusing, I have to say, but maybe that's just me. I'm easily confused. DAA does not have, well, I suppose I'll read it out then, and just so people know. DAA does not have any role in getting luggage to and from the aircraft. This is the responsibility of the airline or its handling agent. Okay. The DAA has responsibility to ensure the baggage carried on its baggage belt infrastructure has the required security screening compliance in place. So that's where they kick in. That's their responsibility, is on the carousel and the coming around. The new upgraded system, which involved having a new baggage belt system being built, brought more complexity to the baggage system. Bags now travel longer distances with several level changes on the journey. Unfortunately, this could not be avoided as the luggage upgrade took place in an area that is capacity restrained due to the layout of buildings close by. They go on to say, we can confirm that it is not the case that DAA decided pets could no longer be carried through Dublin Airport. They can, but pet owners will have to use a company which specialises in transporting pets for companies that facilitate this. There's just two more short lines. It is important to note that this new system only impacts departing pets travelling in the aircraft hold. We regret that the previous system is no longer available for passengers travelling with pets, as the decision was taken solely for the welfare of the animal. Now, does that make sense to you, Sinead?
Yeah, I knew all of that because obviously I've learned all of that in the last 48 hours. But what's funny is that they have no problem letting you bring in your dog, but you can't leave. So you're kind of trapped, really, unless you obviously go through the cargo. And I mean, I heard horror stories that there was a girl who was starting a job the following day, and she had her little dog with her, and they wouldn't let the dog on, and she had to give her dog to her mother and go on. So I'd say there's heartbreaking scenes really about this, and I just don't think there's enough attention paid to it. Like, there should have been maybe an ad taken out or something just to let people know, because it's a significant, substantial difference in price from what we used to pay, which was, like I said, 100 euros a leg, to now it could be up to 600-700, and you have to buy all new carrier equipment, and it just a lot more red tape to go through. Which, as I said, I've no issue doing. I just wish I had been informed, and also I just want everyone else to know this, you know, because it is something that will catch you at the airport, really, because they're not giving the information is not readily available.
Yeah, you don't mind me asking. Well, for you living it up or living in the in lovely Tenerife,
yeah. Well, I know it's a funny one. I work remotely, so I can kind of live anywhere I want.
Brilliant.
So I moved. Yeah, I escaped right before the pandemic, so I got out.
What's life like in Tenerife?
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. I live there with my son. He's also working remotely. So the two of us and the dog. It's nice over there now. It's kind of, I suppose, sunshine all year round, and I can't complain really. But I would like to get back there.
Right. Okay.
It's just been very stressful, really. And I have to say, my little dog has been great. Though he's just looking at me like, you know, he's just happy to be here.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, thanks for highlighting that, because I'm sure there are other people that were caught unawares about this as well, Sinead. And we wish you all the very best. And thanks for contacting Liveline.
No bother. Thanks a million. Thanks for taking the call. Bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
51551 is our text. Now, Chris Sherlock is on the line. Chris, good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Damien. How are you?
I'm fine. And, you know, it's really hard to believe that this still happens. And we've talked about it quite a lot on the programme. We've talked to people like you who've been brave enough to come on and explain and tell their story. You're only 29 now, so this is relatively recently, when you were 13, starting secondary school. And what happened to you?
Yeah, so it was just the first week of secondary school, and I was finding my feet, you know. I was trying to be impressionable and meet new friends, because I only had a handful of my regular friends carry over with me to this school. And within the first week, Damien, I was name called. I was kind of just left there and picked on all the time, because I didn't really have much people around me. So I think that's probably why it happened. I was just that shy kid. So it just turned out then, as I was ignoring it and just let things kind of go by and just hope that it would either stop or move on to somebody else, as bad as that sounds, I just wanted the limelight to be off me, because it wasn't the greatest of limelights. But after that, then one day I was just on, it was a lunch break, and I was on the phone talking to my parents. I'd either talk to my dad or my mother and just let them know how things were going, because that stage of adjusting to the new building and school and stuff. And all of a sudden, this particular day, I was on the phone as normal, and these two lads came up behind me and pinned me against the wall. and took my phone off me and flung it across the area where I was. And before I could even know what was happening, I had a hand around my throat, and it was just a shocking thing to experience. I can still remember that. I'm not going to forget it, to be honest with you, but I just, they were taunting me, you know, and trying to get a rise out of me, but calling me names and stuff like that, and that it just started getting physical from then on.
And were these guys, were they older, or were they the same age as you?
I don't know their exact age, to be honest, but they were older. They were probably a year or two ahead of me. I'm guessing third year student. Yeah.
And what prompted it, do you think? Was it that you were the new kid, you looked vulnerable? What was it?
Well, to be honest, I think it was the new kid, and I think it was because I was shy. That's what I think. I don't know for sure, but I think what I was told afterwards, and it kind of boiled our blood, was when I eventually talked about it and came out about it, it was more of, it was the consequence of being a first-year student. You're prone to having a first-year beating. And that was literally what I was told, and I was in shock. And later on, my parents learned about this and said, you know, this can't be a thing. Like, are you joking? Like, they were livid at it, you know.
And had you ever been bullied up to that point?
No. I primary school went perfect for me. You know, I got on well. I'd done my thing. I had my own friends. I had my own posse. You know, I was grand. You know, I was nervous starting the new school because it was different and stuff. But it was just different. And I think, you know, if I had time to settle, I had no time to settle. I think I would have found my feet eventually. But it was just, and I think that was what they were all playing on. You know, I think they probably realised it. And, you know, because they're third year students or whatever they were established there. Do you know what I mean? So they knew kind of the run of the school, and they knew first years were starting. So I don't know if there was many others that particular year in question that were being picked on, but I was only in the school for 3 weeks because it was a few days followed after this incident out in the schoolyard. I was actually on my way to class, and it was on the top of the, it was the main building, and it was a fifth floor, and it's an old type building. Just to paint you a quick picture, so there's kind of like one of these kind of old style spiral stairs, and then there's like a set of double doors on each corridor. And when we got to the top stairs, there's normally like kids that would be hanging around before they go down into their classes, kind of thing. And I was at these double doors, and these kids were pushing me away. They just said, you have to, you know, to pass here, you have to pay money. And I was like, look, I have to get to class. The bell had just rung. And as I was trying to push by them, and there was a group of four that were in it, and one of them was a part of calling me the name, so I knew they kind of knew of me. And then the other guys were just there, like, pushing and shoving me away. Each time I tried to reach for the handle of the door. But I eventually was pushed back to the wall, and the stairs I had just come up, I was pushed straight down them. They pulled my polo shirt up over my head, and before I knew it, I was down at the end of the stairs looking up at them, laughing at me. And I just remember looking at my arm, and from my wrist to my elbow, just before my elbow, was pumping with blood. And I was just in shock. I was shaking. I was crying. You know, I was just in a state. And I just ran to the school office and tried to get help. And luckily, when I just got to the office, there was a school nurse in that day, and she bandaged me up, and I was left in the office, and my parents were called to bring me home.
And did you report what had happened?
I was asked there and then what had happened, but I covered it up. And each time, even the time of when I was on the phone from being choked against the wall, I covered them both scenarios up, because I didn't want to be that rash that they brand you to be. You know, it's a consequence of, this could get worse if you start telling on us and all this kind of stuff. So I would make up any excuse I could in the moment, you know. Mm-hmm. When I was on the phone, I just said I dropped the phone, the battery fell out, I had to put it back in. And when I was on the stairs, I just said I slipped and fell. You know, I just lost my balance, you know. And then I could think in the moment that's what I would do, because I was ashamed to say I was being bullied, I was being picked on, that I couldn't defend myself. You know, I had all this kind of going around in my head. I didn't want to be a burden to my parents, and I didn't want to be that way. You know, I didn't want to be kind of just that telltale either. All these scenarios going around a million miles an hour in my head, and it was just, I just didn't want to say anything because I thought it would make things worse. So if I say nothing and move on from it, it'll eventually go away. But it just didn't. And
how long did it go on for? How long did this bullying last for? You were only in the first year for 3 weeks when it started, and how long did it continue for?
Well, that scenario of being on the being pushed down the stairs, that was my third week in there, and I was took out of school for a couple of days to recover, and I went back in the following Monday, and I remember going in with my mum. She accompanied me this time because she was kind of worried about my newfound clumsiness, let's say. And when I got to the school gates, Damien, I just froze in complete shock. I had visions of it all happening again and worse, and, you know, getting beaten up more and, you know, this and that, because I think they were going to be worried in case that I would tell on them, these bullies, even though I didn't know who they were. I recognised them from my estate, you know, not my estate, but neighbouring estate. So I thought, well, they're going to be out to get me and see what I've said or whatever, because I had the few days off. But it all came flooding out that day anyway when I was at the school gates. And I was brought home, we went over everything, and then we were on to the school. And I managed to pinpoint out one of the guys that had done it, and he got detention.
And we're not going to obviously identify anybody in this case. And
Not even saying
where you were. But anyway, go on.
Yeah. The person in question was dealt with, basically.
Okay.
They got detention.
But did it stop at this point when you broke down, confided in your mother what was going on? Was that the end of it then, Chris?
It was the end of the bullying, because I didn't go back to school. I was given the chance to go back to finish my education, go forward. But I just couldn't go back because I had lost trust in people. There was a lot going on there. At the time, I didn't know this, but I was suffering from PTSD. So it just kind of went hand in hand with what was going on.
You were taken out of school completely?
Yeah, when we went back home that day after me explaining everything at the school gate, my parents went talking to the school and said what was said, and then I was recommended to the GP and all this kind of stuff to just start talking to a child psychologist. And in the meantime, with all this going on in the background, I had educational welfare officers coming out to my house. I had teachers from the school trying to get me to go back into school, but I couldn't do it because I was afraid of that it would all start happening again. It was the fear of it all, Damien.
Yeah.
And we talk about the
impact it had on you right up to now, and why you're sharing your story. But just to get a sense of the picture, you were taken out of school. Did you go to another school, or were you homeschooled from then on?
I got school tuition for a couple of months after, and it was supposed to lead me up to my junior cert, and then possibly go back to school or even get me into second year. That was kind of the plan. But I did the tuition. It got cut due to government cutbacks at the time. And I was just literally left to my own devices then, because I was pleaded to go back to school, but I just couldn't. I knew if I wanted to survive that I'd have to stay away from school.
Did you get as far as junior cert then, or did you get a junior cert?
No junior cert and no leaving cert. I didn't go back to school at all after that.
So after 3 weeks of secondary school and being bullied so badly, it completely changed your whole life.
Yeah, it did. It restructured things. You know, it was just the way it went, and I had all this kind of going on in my head that, you know, mm-hmm. I need to get an education. I wanted to go back to school. In my heart and soul, I knew I had to do it. I wanted to do it, but every time I tried to even make an attempt or think of going back to school, I would be, you know, in a state, like the anxiety that would come from it was just surreal. Like, I'd be up to 4 o'clock in the morning, I'd be losing sleep nearly every night when I was trying to go back into school, and it just wasn't happening. And it wasn't the way I see it now, Damien. It wasn't meant to be. I just had to create my own path.
But how low did you go at that point? You're 13, 14 years of age. This is after happening to you. You're forced out of school. I'm just trying to get a sense of the impact on you at such a young age.
Yeah, well, I remember I just turned 14 and we had a meeting about going back to school, and it was a meeting that I didn't like, and it was told to me that, look, you're going to have to go back at some stage. Everything was kind of getting to me, and it did at times, but this particular day it did, Damien, and I just went off and walked, and I just contemplated suicide. I'm not going to lie to you, I just thought, well, I don't want to be a burden to anybody. I need to end this all. I don't want my parents to worry about me. I don't want teachers to care about me anymore, because if I'm not here, yeah, it'll just be that easier, where I'm not going to be a problem.
But that, but you were saved as such.
I was, yeah. Moments away from doing the deed, let's say. Two friends from my estate were walking up by where I was, and they just saw me and started talking to me, you know, and just engaged with me. And we went back playing video games for the afternoon, and it was that distraction that kind of took me away from the breaking point, because everything was going on in my head. It's like, do you remember, you know, when you see those movies where they do all these flashbacks and you see everything in the flashback montage? That's what it felt like in my brain, and that's what I was seeing. I was seeing all the bad. I wasn't seeing any good at all. And I just thought, I need to be out of here. But that distraction from my friends, just it saved me. It really did.
And you are where you are today and able to look back now as a stronger person. Chris, I'm just conscious that, you know, it's bullying, schoolyard bullying, workplace bullying, whatever, but, particularly where children are involved and at 13 years of age to go through what you went through, it's just, you know, it sends shivers down the spine. But and unfortunately, it happens. And I don't know how badly it's happening now or how common it is. But I want you now to talk to people that might have suffered from bullying or are suffering from bullying, or parents listening who feel that their children may be bullied in school, and we're only 3 weeks into the new curriculum or into the new school year as well. So what advice do you give to the Chris Sherlock 13-year-old?
Well, all I can say is, every individual is different. There's kids out there that will exceed better and deal with things much better than I did. But nevertheless, you know, it's genuinely okay not to be okay. So sure, Talk up, you know, and, you know, express yourself the best you can. You may not be able to do it, you know, in the moment there and then, but talk to a sibling, talk to a parent, talk to anyone that's willing to listen, a friend or a teacher. I do school talks from time to time, and I'm saying to teachers, you know, even just have like comment boxes that are anonymous in the classroom where a student can say, look, I'm experiencing this, can you help me? And, you know, can you be available after class? And at least the teacher can say, look, if there's any problems, I'm available after class. To do things in a discreet way, because some people don't want to be in the public and come out and talk about it because they're more nervous and they're afraid of consequences that might happen. But talking is key. Kindness is out there. This won't last forever. You know, it's just the quicker you talk up, that's the thing. If I could go back and change it, I would talk up a lot more quicker. I wouldn't have covered up everything in the beginning. I would have liked to have said, right, okay, this is where I need to talk to my parents or talk to anyone that's willing to listen. Sometimes it's easier to talk to someone that's not a family member. Maybe talk to your GP, where they can, you know, they can help you talk to someone that's appropriate. All these things matters, and it is key. And for anyone that is a bully out there, like, you know, show kindness. Like, what have you to gain by harassing somebody or, you know, being narky to each other? In this day and age, you know, we went through a lot in life as it is, and life is a roller coaster. That's a whole different ball game and a whole different show. But, you know, it's show kindness is the true thing, you know, and there's no need to be taking out anything on anybody, you know, just because you're having a bad day or whatever. Like, you know, I didn't ask to be bullied. I was the victim of it. You know, and it was just the backlash I got. So no matter how bad your life is, someone out there is going through something very similar to what you're going through, but that's where talking is key. And some men don't do it, some women don't do it. You know, it doesn't matter who exactly. It's just, it's important to talk up and speak up, and you'll eventually get back on track, and you'll find a way past, whether it be the problem or the situation that you're in, of, you know, whatever the case may be. I can't speak on everything, but that's what I've learned. It took a while to learn, considering I lost great trust in people from the beginning.
But there is, I mean, you're living proof. There is a way out, Chris. There is a way of dealing with. There is a way of being able to deal with this and enjoy your life.
Yeah, of course there is. Yeah, like this is only momentarily stuff that passes. You know, I know it might not seem like it in the moment if you're experiencing bullying and if it's been going on for a while, whether it's in the workplace. In this day and age now, we have social media, you know, there's TikTok, there's all these kind of other platforms out there. And it's like, those platforms are great for socialising and getting involved in community and getting involved with people and meeting new friends. It is great if it's used right, but, you know, parents that are letting their kids use it, just be more mindful that there is people out there that will post and do nasty comments on pages. And they're literally hiding behind the keyboard as well, some of these people.
Yeah.
But it all passes. But for it to pass, you have to, you know, get the courage, talk up, speak up, and you can progress on. And as for comments and stuff like that, like, you know, ignore them and move on. And, you know, it's the best case, you know, report it to the report where necessary and where appropriate.
Yeah. Now, you've shared your story, I think, as well on mental health for millennials. How can people access that? And
So Mental Health for Millennials is a book series with Book Hub Publishing here in Ireland. They're an Irish company, and they've put together a 7-book series, and my story features in volume 4.
Okay.
And for anyone that wants to read more about mental health and my story about bullying or depression, grief and so on, they can get it on bookhubpublishing.com, and it's in bookstores around the country as
okay.
well.
We'll tweet that as well. We'll tweet the contact details for people that want to get a copy of that. And there is help out there. There is loads of help out there. And Chris, thanks for sharing your story with us and letting us know that you are well now and helping others. And if anybody has been affected by any of the issues raised, remember you can call the Samaritans 24 hours a day for confidential support, or to be able to reach out to somebody, 116 123, that's 116 123, or you can email joe@samaritans.org. Chris Sherlock, thank you very much for contacting us, and I'm glad to hear that you're doing so well now after that terrible episode as a youngster. But there is help out there, and it's Mental Health for Millennials, Volume 4. If people Google that, they'll find ways of getting a copy of it. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a million, Damien, for having me. All the best.
Well done.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Yeah, and we heard about that plane crash on the Wexford coast. Was it last Thursday? And we were chatting to one of the people who were first on the scene there on the programme on Friday. But Eugene O'Sullivan, similar thing happened to you, was it last year?
Hi, good afternoon to you, Damien.
Good to
talk
to you.
I was involved in a plane accident last year where I suffered an engine failure flying in near Galway, near Athenry, and had to make a forced landing or crash landing and suffered serious injuries along with my colleague who was flying with me on the day.
And what happened?
We suffered an engine failure at about 2,500 feet. It was a lovely clear day. I was flying from Rathfoul in Cork up to Debohan in Roscommon to a fly-in. That's where pilots fly in with their planes, have a cup of coffee, make a donation to the local charity. And just cruising along, the engine failed. And then it's something you prepare for, but you never expect it to happen. But it did happen.
Yeah.
And I had to deal with it.
And deal with it you did. But I'm just, you know, don't even contemplate or think about what goes through your mind when suddenly you discover you're in trouble.
Well, you're training. Every pilot and anybody who's ever flown an aircraft will have learned very early in training how to deal with the possibility of an engine failure.
Well, what's the first thing that goes through your mind?
The first thing, it takes probably 10-20 seconds to realise that it's actually happening. and then to go through the drill, as they say, fly the plane, find the field, find the fault. But you have to fly the plane. You must keep the plane flying. You push the nose forward, you'll pick up your airspeed and hold your airspeed. In the Cessna 172 that I was in, it was about 65 knots. And then start looking for a suitable field to land. And with all, I suppose, due deference to the fields of Athenry, the fields are a little bit small around there. And trying to find a suitable one wasn't that easy. But eventually, I managed to get down, but not as successfully as I would have liked to. And he impacted very severely with the ground. And the plane was written off and suffered some very serious injuries. But I fully recovered, and so has my friend who was with me on the day.
God. And, like, how long from the realisation you're in trouble to you actually land? How long do you have to try and find somewhere to land in a scenario like that?
Yeah, you roughly, I was from the time the engine failed to the time I got onto the ground, about 2 minutes. So it was the time window is small, particularly at lower altitudes. I mean, the higher you are, the more time you have to look around to find a suitable place to land.
And what is the most the next best thing to a runway?
Well, the next best thing to a runway, I mean, I was unlucky in that I had just passed the motorway, the Dublin Galway motorway. I probably would have gone for the motorway with the traffic if it had been at the time, but I had passed that, so I would have to look for a suitable field into a place called Kiltulla.
Yeah,
just near Kilimer Daly's GA pitch was at one said looked like an option, but it looked like there was people on the pitch, so that I had to veer away from that. And eventually I got down, as I said, reasonably successfully. Once the aircraft doesn't break up completely, the chances are you will survive. It's similar to looking at the accident in Wexford the other night. The plane remained pretty intact. And the pilot there did a good job as well to get down in relatively one piece.
And what injuries did you suffer, Eugene?
Yeah, I had multiple injuries. I had like about 14 individual breaks from my ankle to ribs, cracked vertebrae, injuries to the eye sockets, bits and pieces of that. But everything has healed, and I have to say the people in Galway University Hospital were, the health services were remarkable. It was my first engagement with the health services, and they were brilliant in the way they dealt with it. And we made good recovery.
And Eugene, have you got behind, I suppose, into the cockpit again? Have you flown since?
Yeah, I have. In recent weeks, I got back in the air again, and I did my flight test with an examiner out at Weston, out of the National Flight Centre, where I learned originally. And I'm good to go again.
Didn't put you off at all?
No, it wouldn't. No. Except when the jockey falls off the horse, he has to get up again.
That's true indeed. You have to have nerves of steel.
I wouldn't look at it like that. I mean, it's something that you train for and that, you deal with it when it arrives.
Yeah.
Didn't expect it to arrive, but it did, and I had to deal with it as best I could.
Yeah. Now, we were hoping to talk to you last Friday, but you couldn't talk to us because you were awarded a Scott Medal for bravery. Nothing to do with landing the plane, but this is going back, of course, to the kidnap of Don Tidy back in 1983, which those of us old enough to remember that drama over 3 weeks, and eventually he was found by a combination of the Gardaí and the Army in a wooded area in County Leitrim. Now, the kidnappers were never found. But what was your role that day, Eugene?
Like last Friday was a very, very proud day for me, receiving a Scott Medal, but tinged with sadness at the loss of the lives of the people who died that day, recruit Garda Gary Sheehan and Private Patrick Kelly. Mm-hmm. Who were murdered by a provisional IRA criminal gang who had kidnapped Mr. Tidy. On the day, I was part of a search party in that area, and we engaged with the gang when they broke free from the Rada Wood where Mr. Tidy had been held.
Were you shot at by them?
Yes, we were shot at, yeah. We had a firearms engagement where we were a little back from the woods. Yeah, we had an exchange of fire with them.
It was a very dramatic day. I actually do remember it. I was probably only 10 at the time or something. It was coming up to Christmas, wasn't it?
It was a very dramatic day. As I said, the terrible loss of life by two good young men serving the state from an Garda Síochána and the Irish Army, Óglaigh na hÉireann, the real Óglaigh na hÉireann. in an effort to rescue Mr. Tidy. It was successful insofar as Mr. Tidy was rescued and returned to his family. But yeah, unfortunately, two families suffered greatly in the loss of their loved ones.
Yeah, that as you said, and remembered, and their family members were there on Friday for that special ceremony. But as you said, the kidnappers were never caught, and you were one of the brave men. I think there was 15 or more involved in that rescue.
There was a lot more than 15 involved. We were the 15 who were honoured on Friday, okay, yeah. But there were many, many more people who
involved
were there
in
on
that
the day,
operation, yeah,
who also played a great part in the effort to rescue Don Tidy. But as I said, it's always the memory is always of the life lost, Gary Sheehan and Patrick Kelly.
Yeah, and we remember them indeed. Eugene, listen, it's been wonderful talking to you. There's a book in you, I think, at this stage.
No, I've returned now to the quietness and the beauty of Southwest Kerry here, looking out at Skellig. So I don't think.
Right. Well for you.
Anything left to write about.
Well for you. Anyway, listen, safe flying in the future. Thanks a million for chatting to us, and good to talk to you. That's Eugene O'Sullivan there, bringing the programme to an end today, where the researcher was Richie Byrne, Liam Mullen was on sound, and Annette Egan produced, and Radar sees next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.